Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land. His practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Welcome to another episode of Day in the Life, a reality show, a free stream of consciousness from the 50s. Your eyewitness account, your first-hand account to the pop culture, trampling the culture. Having stepping back from the time of the very beginning of my life as a child, seeing the incrementalization of, how shall I say, popularity of the music, of Hollywood, of all the imagery that creates such emotion. I've been slow to learn with the help of a mother's tough love and through circumstances of life through which if you haven't had enough bad, you don't know what good is. I was happy to be named Sue for the first 10 years of my life. Life was tough. Oh, you got to be named Sue. I think every child should be named Sue. What do you think, folks? Welcome to the end of the week as things go along with the culture going downhill. Can you envision a snowball turning into a snowball, into a snowman? Can you envision something traveling downhill like a snowball getting bigger and getting bigger with each rotation? It moves quicker and doubles up in size even quicker. Can you visualize that at all? Folks, that's what I've been seeing. I've been seeing this metaphorical snowball of the culture, this metaphor of our culture going downhill through little incrementalizations at a time, just really easy. It's the culture, stupid.
I've had it. I'm serious. I've had it up to here, you know. Haven't you? Haven't you had it? Well, now I've got it. I've got a rant and roll. I know what I know. Unlike most of you that think you know, you think. Unlike most of you and you and you and yes, maybe even you. Indeed, not only me, but gosh, 2 and 3 aren't great numbers. Now, are they? You see, I've been watching this. And I've just had it. I've had it up to here. Haven't come down there from there. From there in hell. The hell we fear not, fear not, indeed fear not. Italian, never white, always American, but not recognized. No, why Italian? The wine with the waters parted, diluted to a hyphen. Assimilate, dilate, dilute, pollute with abundanza. Pollute that which is the water to the wine. Yes, waters parted, now we're white. I'm telling you, I've had it. I've had it up to here. Check it out. Not all things are black and white. Italian, I am. Wrong, old, right. Rules to break. Satisfy the needs. Rules to break. Pay the price. Fall on the sword. Accept the heat. Rules to break. The fun we make. Do as I say, not as I do. Were the rules we had to follow, but you got caught. Was the burden for which price paid. You compete with life. Do all you want. Do all you want. The risk, but oh, it's fun. Pay the price. Shut your mouth. Oh, woe is me. Dad, bail me out. I don't belong. Take him out, officer. That's my son. The Joneses, while being swept up, wood must keep up. Never mind. Air is thin. Awareness is thinner. Feeling faint so high. Looking down on others. Lucky are we. The anointed ones. Yes, the anointed. We know better. Ooh, better than those. And yes, even those who think we know. You see, folks, not all things are black and white. My name is Tony Venuti.
It's what the media tells us they are, aren't they, folks? Welcome back. That was my little pre-recorded rant on the culture, stupid. Do you really think it's the culture? look at the attack we're having on the family. The attack on the family, not the attack on women's rights, but the attack on the family. Look at this business in Florida, where a man, supposedly within the letter of the law, much to be argued and assessed in a court of law, not in a court of public opinion, by polls brought to you by Fox, CNN, NBC, ABC. You really think the media is on our side? Huh? You know, I've been watching these liberals since I was a kid. The spoiled kids I grew up with. The trust fund babies. Having been brought up on the political side of town, but on the other side of the street where low-income housing was just starting to appear. Oh, in their own backyard, those liberals. Be careful what you ask for. You just might get it, but I've been watching these kids. Ridicule me for my not having the socioeconomic privilege they do. You don't have to be black to be ridiculed. You don't have to have black to be racist. Of course, you know my take on that one. I think racism is quite natural. Thank you. As I often said, there's only two kinds of people in this world, according to me, as far as I'm concerned. That's Italian and those who want to be Italian. Is that racist? Heck yeah. And if everybody doesn't feel every way about their own selves, and I'm going to suggest something to you, there's a lack of self-esteem in terms of who you are. Who are you after all? I am me. Who are you? I am my country. I am the owner of me. I am responsible for my, how shall I say, success or failure in this life. The world does not owe me a living. I don't want to have to pay anything back by somebody giving me something because I told them they owed it to me, but because I really didn't do anything to earn it, they now own me. I'm a little bit smarter than that trick bag, okay? What we have here, folks, is a confusion of the minds and how to think. But I'm going to go through some Facebook's little chat right here, see what we got at my friends here. Talking about Fox News. Fox News, better than other news networks that are still about lukewarm, moderate, amoral conservatism. I wish Joe Farrow would turn his site, WND.com, into a news network. Barry Seacrest say, on the strictly the news level, guys, but I don't get the news through Fox alone or anyone else for that matter. I get it everywhere. If you watch the conservative news shows, not reports, Gingrich is on almost every night. So come on, Newt, my argument still stands, but one other thing, I don't necessarily want a right-wing news organization necessarily. I just want a fair and balanced report. Guys like us can take care of the opinion side of it. Does that mean, Barry, that when you come to thinking to yourself? Apparently, you see, Newt Gingrich was complaining about Fox News bias favoring Romney. Well, I got to think that they do, to be honest with you. I watch a lot of Fox, and they give Gingrich his airtime, but everything being equal, folks, how many times has Fox used the term the presumptive nominee when referring to Romney? How many times have you heard Fox News referred to as the presumptive nominee? Quite often. And that's just one easy example, because the bottom line is this. It's just not the time that you give people. It's what you're feeding to us. It's how you're telling us what to think, how to believe. I see the way these reports are framed. It's almost like minute to minute. You can feel it. You can taste it. You can touch it. Don't you? I mean, you know what's going along a lot around here? People are getting excited about on Facebook. Is this one clip for the Battle of Athens. Did you know such a thing existed? The Battle of Athens? Sounds like something in Greek mythology, right? Or whatever, Greek history. Well, apparently this is a real situation that happened during World War II where voting was being stolen for years, for about 8, 9, 10 years, and finally they had enough. the primary election held August 1 to intimidate voters. This was in, Etowah, Tennessee in 1946. The citizens, including some World War II veterans, accused the local officials of political corruption and voter intimidation. The event is sometimes cited by firearm ownership advocates as an example of the value of the Second Amendment in combating tyranny. The primary election was held on August 1. To intimidate voters, Mansfield brought in some 200 armed deputies. GI poll watchers were beaten almost at once. At about 3 p.m., Tom Gillespie, an African-American voter, was told by a sheriff's deputy that he could not vote. Despite being beaten, Gillespie persisted. The enraged deputy shot him. The gunshot drew a crowd. Rumors spread that Gillespie had been shot in the back. He later recovered. Other deputies detained the poll watchers in a polling place as they made the ballot counting public. A crowd gathered. They bombed the place, man. You had military members, ex-military, come in, regular citizens, arm themselves from weapons at the armory, return to the place where the military had commandeered the election, so to speak, where they was holding a public record of the counting, although the public was chosen. So those that were resisting because they weren't allowed to visually recognize the vote were beaten up on. Well, while inside, the return of the citizens came armed, and they proceeded to just have a gun battle through the windows, and then when they didn't come out still, they blew the place up, and all of a sudden, all of the wrongdoers were seen coming out of the voting structure with their hands up. These people were never prosecuted. The election went on, and I guess in 1992 there was a made-for-television movie called An American Story, and it was based upon the McMahon County War, but it was set in a Texas town in 1947. I guess that general election, when they had it on November 5th, passed quietly. McKinney County residents, having restored the rule of law, returned to their daily lives. Pat Mansfield moved back to Georgia, and Paul Cantrell set up an auto dealership in Etowah. Almost everybody who knew Cantrell in the years after the ballot agreed that he was not bitter about what had happened. Oh, really? The Battle of Athens, restoring the rule of law. Tony Armstead says, the best argument against gun control I've heard. Well, while I'm at it, why don't I give a Facebook shout-out to all my birthday friends. To all my birthday friends, let's give them a little shout-out. We have Ashley Marie. Happy birthday, Ashley. And Cliff Brown. Happy birthday, Cliff. Cool Mike. Happy birthday. And Domenico Frank Esposito, who is very prolific. He's got his own little happening going on. Maybe I'll give a click and promote it. Let's see what Frank does. Let me see. He does. He's running for president 2012 with the Commander-in-Chief Strategic Command. I think he's being somewhat sarcastic. Espo Diff. Oh, man. Happy birthday. And Joseph Scott Venuti. Oh, my God, my namesake. My namesake. Happy birthday, Joseph. Actually, Joe's the name of my brother who's sitting in Florence Penitentiary right now and will probably die there. Joseph Venuti. Gosh, could be my brother, but it's not. Tom DeWeese. Happy birthday, Tom. You're listening to the ex-conservative radio hour where you have this ex-con preach virtue, because it really is about evil, folks. And all these things we're experiencing while everybody's telling you it's the economy. You really think it's the economy? You think it's the economy when you've got Israel facing the wrath of nuclear weapons, and we're being told to poo-poo it. You call it the economy when you've got a race war being perpetuated by the likes of Sharpton and Jackson behind that Trayvon Martin shooting with Zimmerman, the white Hispanic. Is our president a white black president? Is he a white African American? Maybe we should have white black American versus black African American. You know, my cousins were half Irish, half Italian. And when they were talking about their nationality, they would say, well, I'm half Italian, I'm half Irish. They wouldn't say I'm Irish. They wouldn't say I'm Italian, although sometimes they did. But when it got right down to the brass tacks, they said, no, I'm half Irish, half Italian. You don't hear anybody saying, well, my mother's black, my mother's white, I'm half black. I know, that makes me a racist, too. See, all these, it took 50 years for this, 60 years, 70 years, and actually it's been in place since around 1919 with the advergence of cultural theory, with the advergence of Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto being brought into vogue. Ask your liberal friends, will you please? Or ask anyone that you really want to know where they stand, who they have more respect for, Karl Marx or Thomas Jefferson? Karl Marx or George Washington? Karl Marx or John Adams or Edmund Burke, you know, given the title most often that I've been seeing as the birth of modern conservatism as we see it. I actually read some of John Burke from this portable conservative reader that is just awesome, man, writing from the 1800s. It's and every last one of them sounding sort of like Newt, or Newt is the only one in this generation that has any gravitas that could sit with our founding fathers into the likes of these profound philosophers like Edmund Burke. Our culture has been readily taken in tearing apart the fabric of our family, and all roads lead back to Marx. I can't imagine somebody 30 years old. Well, I can. I understand. Number 40 of the Communist Manifesto, discredit the family as an institution. Encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. Look at this 41. Emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Attribute prejudices, mental blocks, and retardation of children to the suppressive influence of parents. Another way to raise children away from the negative influence of their parents is for the children not to have parents, huh? To maybe help promote promiscuity. Oh, I'm sorry. That's number 26. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as natural, normal, and healthy. Oh, and of course this one too. Let's infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Let's discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious crutch. Oh, no, we don't need a religious crutch, but when we've got a $500 million lottery out there and we're talking about the negative influences of common folk who can afford little discretionary money, if any, outside of feeding themselves and theirs, we're told that, no, this gives them hope. This gives them hope. So we'll replace churches for that crutch with a lottery with that crutch. Don't you think? That's how this stuff works, folks. I'm just getting tired of it, to be honest with you. Aren't you? John Bobick put a post out there. Do you ever wonder how the Georgia Obama eligibility case turned out the way it did? And I guess Georgia dismisses Obama eligibility channel and then gets $8.3 billion federal grant. Now, isn't that something? Let's just buy our way through all which we want to, any foe, any hurdle we have to jump. Everybody has a price, huh? Everybody has a price. The Western Center of Journalism reports that thing was greased, as they say in Chicago, referring to a political phenomena known as being handled before the table. Well, bloggers are asking, was it? Word now coming out reveals just 2 days after the Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, gave Barack Obama the green light to appear on Georgia election ballots, the Department of Energy awarded Kemp's state an eye-popping $8.3 billion loan guarantee to begin construction on two nuclear plants. In the face of shocking dissent by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission Chairman, Director Gregory Zasko, four other commissioners approved awarding Southern Energy the first nuclear construction licenses since 1978, just 1 year before the tragedy of the Three Mile Island nuclear disaster put a hold on all U.S. nuclear plant construction. Now, understand, folks, Georgia was holding up an eligibility for Obama's voting to be on the ballot. And now, just days after he was put on the ballot, they get these loan guarantees. And understand all what it is. It's simply loan guarantees. It isn't even getting the money for free. They have to pay the money back. They're not even getting a gift. This goes to show you how corrupt these people are when they understand that 10 years from now, when the effects of this money that is free money to me up front, it's going to spend the same way to me up front as if it was money that never had to be paid back. It's a windfall of cash flow. I can put a lot of people to business. I can get a lot more employees to business. But he went against his base, didn't he? He went against his base by approving that because he was that desperate to get on the ballot in Georgia, because imagine if he had other kinds of problems. Because on paper, he was going to have other kinds of problems. Oh, man, I'll tell you, that's a good one, job, Bobek, baby. What do we got over here? Let's go to the room. Arizona for Newt, 2012 to 2020. This is the idea of having Newt for 8 years. Wouldn't that be neat? He could actually do some damage. Oh, boy, okay. I put a question out there to my black, African, American, Negro, colored friends, whatever we call them. What do we call people that don't want to, you know, I don't know, is it any one person's fault? Is it a group of people's fault? Is it the culture's fault? Is it the media's fault? But to all my black friends out there, why haven't you come out against the Black Panther Party? As the whites have come out arm in arm with Martin Luther King. Where are you? And by the way, while I'm at it, where's all the Hispanics? Where's all the Latinos, man? Standing up for Zimmerman, huh? Thinking maybe Zimmerman got railroaded, huh? Deborah Block saying, some have tone. Don't you watch Hannity, the 360 Tea Party guy, Angela, and the other nice lady who's on Fox News off and on? The one man who turned in Reverend Wright to Sean when Obama was running for office? See, here's the deal. One man, another man, celebrities in their own right, you know, because that's what they are. They're commentators, they're on the news. Now, I'm talking about people hitting the streets in the hundreds and thousands and ten thousands. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about somebody that's a representative because of he's making money today by, you know, being the pundit that he is, et cetera, et cetera. This is what people do. We understand that. I'm not talking about those people on TV, 1, 2, 5. No, I'm talking about people on the streets. On the streets. Joe Newby, on a room called Restoring America Together, says a Tea Party Nation leader to Mitt Romney, "Don't expect us to campaign for you." That's a Tea Party campaign person. That's unfortunate, okay? That's unfortunate, but that's only one person's remark. We don't know if this is the general feeling of all the people in the Tea Party. I can understand that they wouldn't be as excited as campaigning for somebody like Newt or Rick Santorum, etc. But to put an eye or a stick in your face and say, "Don't you think we're going to be campaigning for you?" I think it's childish. Barry Sequest, "The communists within, Alan Marx, Alan West on the Marxists." All right, you know, there is a socialist party, a communist socialist party that exists to this day, and in fact, there's about 80 members of Congress. I posted that. We've talked about it several times. But I guess Alan West is bringing it national, baby. And he's not backing off the statements, even though on Fox News, he refused to come on to give comment. But apparently, Megyn Kelly reporting, but he refuses to come on, was starting to give the impression that he was backing off his statements. Of, you know, he didn't want to come on for fear of having to support what he said. But the reporter that was on the show with Megyn, reporting on this, stated that Alan West wasn't backing off whatsoever. Apparently, ABC News took issue with Alan West, and in his very truthful comments on the communism recently, reporter Annie Bingham challenged West in what is actually an opinion column by her, despite the articles being stealthily disguised as a news report. Here's what ABC and Bingham stated. "It's not the 1940s or the 1950s. Joe McCarthy is no longer rooting out alleged Soviet supporters in the legislature, and the country is not entangled in the Cold War. But don't tell Representative Alan West," the Florida Republican told the crowd in his home state Tuesday, "that as many as 81 members of the Congress are communists." Our point here would be, so what if Representative West wants to truthfully expound on the congressional communist? Do not the American people have a right to understand exactly which ideology is being embraced and secretly practiced by certain members of its own government? I personally started using the term socialist Democrats way back in 2009 in multiple articles in an effort to describe the radical element within the new Democratic Party. In fact, I had extracted this stylized socialist Democratic label from a number of communist political parties in Greece. The term has slowly but naturally caught fire during Obama's tenure and has become almost prominent in its usage as a natural progression of what we are now seeing. The simple but unfortunate fact is that we have witnessed a large number of Democrats actually flee the Democratic Party over the last several years, some going Republican, some simply getting out altogether. Did you actually think this was mere happenstance? Bingham concludes by finally going straight to the actual facts. In this clip of the town hall event that was posted online Wednesday, an audience member asked, "What percentage of the American legislature do you think are card-carrying Marxists?" "I believe there's about 78 to 81 members of the Democratic Party that are members of the Communist Party," he said in this video. But what is truly remarkable about this story is that Representative Ellen West does indeed get it right. The story is not hyperbole at all. And you will also note that the reporter apparently fails in trying to counter her initial arguments with any sort of fact, because her purpose was to simply denigrate Representative West's comments. She makes no effort whatsoever to repel West's arguments simply because she can't. Obama was repeatedly attacked capitalism. Obama, who has repeatedly attacked capitalism along with American business in general, while championing redistribution, leaves us with very little doubt that he is a socialist at best or a neo-Marxist at worst, especially with his repeated assertions that, when boiled down, clearly represent a Marxist collectivist view. This, in addition to an adoring party of leveraged Democrats who have done nothing except make Obama's global collectivist views a political reality in the United States. For those disbelievers out there who are adamantly refused to see the truth in all of this, I can only say it's time to wake up before it's too late. And that right there from the Examiner. Folks, you've been listening to Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio hour from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's the culture, stupid. Come on, man. All roads lead back to Marxism. I told you I've been watching this stuff. Uh-huh. I've seen it all. I've seen it with the civil rights movement. I've seen this black power thing calm down. I see where rights were given to those who were less fortunate. And the world did a whole lot of work to find every bit of people out there that could be less fortunate than the white man, than the Western Caucasian, from Western European, who stole this country from the Indians and have been belittling us over and over again. I've been watching it, man. Through the eyes of a child, through the eyes of somebody who was a little disenfranchised himself but had pride. I wasn't going to be a victim. My mother taught me right. The world doesn't own you a living. It doesn't owe you a living. It might own you a living if you just want buy me, give me, I needs all the time, right? I can see that. The world doesn't owe you diddly squat, man. You come into this world and all you are is a plus negative right now. That's all you do is a plus negative right now. That's all you are. You're actually meaningless. The only thing you mean something to is your family. It's their job, their responsibility to make sure that you're not going to be a burden. Bringing in the music that brought in liberalism is sexy, that made discontent sexy, that made misbehavior sexy. Be right back. War on women, do you think that really exists? Does that exist to you, the war on women? What a joke, huh? It's the war on the family, man. It's the whole idea of splitting those that have and those that don't. Those who are normal and those who are not. Oh, what did I just say, normal? Did I just say those who are normal? Ooh. Okay, those are regular. Those are regular. Is that better than normal? Those are regular. Oh, wait a minute. How about those that are irregular? It's like anything else. You have a heads and you have a tails. You have an up and you have a down. You have a heterosexual and you have a homosexual. These are two sides of a coin that traditional Western culture has seen as heterosexual as the positive, as homosexual as the negative. What happens when you go from tolerance? Oh, we just want to be tolerated. When what they're really asking and what they've been really demanding, and when I mean they, I don't mean the homosexual community. I mean the politicians who are leveraging their political ability to drive a wedge between opposing forces, and I'm talking about those who are involved in the Democratic Party or the Marxist Party. The American Marxist Party should be the Democratic Party, huh? Isn't the Democratic Party the American Marxist Party? Maybe we should rename the Democratic Party, don't you think? See, it's all about getting your foot in the door, isn't it? Anytime you try to seduce someone, anytime you try to get yourself in somebody's good graces, isn't it always about that door opening? Oh, it's so bad that homosexuals to know responsibility of themselves. It's not their fault. They're different. And demeaning them isn't a very nice thing to do. And even just being accepted, being tolerant isn't enough. No, we want you to be accepting. They're going to be able to, you know, participate in the foxholes, fighting battles with other men. We now have to redefine men. This is all about the normalization of perversion and what happens, isn't it? Isn't this really all about the normalization of perversion and what happens because of it? If you ask me, that's what it is. Because when you put someone who is not balanced in the minds of the basis point from which we think philosophically is appropriate in terms of the sexual behavior of mankind, how can we possibly put them in charge of making any kind of decisions that have anything to kind of do with any kind of moral imperative whatsoever from which supposedly our country was founded on? But these are the things that I've been whittled down, man. Hey, KJ, nice to see you. I'm thinking the family is being destroyed by homosexuality. It's really not homosexuality versus heterosexuality. Because by definition, it's more like homosexuality versus the family. Homosexuality versus the family. We're thrown back into the closet for even there being like a family. I think the liberals bit off more than what they can chew, but it really does disrobe them in terms of seeing just really where they're coming from in their arrogance. And you give a kid an inch, they want to take a mile, huh? And now that they're in place, you think they're going to give it up when Obama loses by a landslide, no matter who is up against him? He is making so many... You know, I always wondered growing up, you know, if these spoiled kids that got into power behind the leverage of celebrity and culture and all like that, and utilizing the white-black thing and the race thing to diminish the ability for white people to stand up for themselves. I'm not afraid to talk about it, you know. And I think I talk about it from a good place in my heart. Because this isn't really about black people or white people. Or is it? Of course it is, stupid. We can't have it both ways. This is the kind of conversation. We've got a lot of angst in us, man. I myself am fed up looking at it from the perspective of a non-white being called white. A non-white being called white when I like the idea of being Italian better, thank you. I never knew the language of white. Huh? Where's the romance in that? But this whole notion of this generation from the 50s, the generations forward up till now, having a debt to repay to victims, having a debt today to repay to victims, A, we didn't do anything wrong. And I don't think we should be held accountable for deeds that our great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents didn't have any part to do, and particularly me. And my side of the immigration didn't come until the 1900s. Southern Europeans, Italians certainly had very little to do with it. No, we came, you know, we're like fair weather fans. We came over to America after America was something really good. Oh, man, let's just jump on board the gravy train. This is America. So something we had no business being part of, we're responsible for paying back, right? Okay. And the people who are going to get the benefit of being paid back are generations way ahead of the victims, to which they're not feeling any of the pain from which those victims felt. This is absurd, isn't it? Come on. Of course it is. So we have an avid homosexual, a lesbian. You know, I'll tell you where she's coming from. Exceptions to the rule are always contemptuous of the rule. That which you rebel from, you always have contempt for. The flip side of rebellion is contempt. And this, you know, we're talking about God, Joe Biden says the war on women is real. He's another loon, isn't he? I guess he said Thursday he believes the rights of the war on women is real and can be particularly salient during the multiple Supreme Court appointments he expects to come during the next president's term. Trying to bring it back to the economy again, Mitt Romney, the presumptive nominee, as you'll hear Fox talk about, CNN talk about, ABC, the presumptive nominee, the presumptive nominee. That's a beautiful thing. Language, isn't it? The way people design, it's almost like designer lifestyle brought to you by the media, telling us what to believe, what to think, when to think it, how to feel it. Axelrod to CNN. Rosen is your employee, not ours. Obama campaign senior strategist David Axelrod suggested Thursday that Romney campaign jumped on Hillary Rosen's comments like a raft in the deep blue sea as they drown in their own problems. It was an unfortunate comment, Axelrod said to John King, following up on a Wednesday night tweet in which he described Rosen's remarks as inappropriate and offensive. The president, vice president, first lady, and several other top Obama advisors have all distanced themselves from Rosen in the last day. And Axelrod said that though Rosen is an Obama supporter, Team Obama did what was right in speaking out against her. I think we have an obligation in politics and in public life when someone, even friends, say things that are inappropriate to say so. In fact, certain ways, when your friends say it, there's more of an obligation to do so, Axelrod said. Let's see what we got here.
We have an obligation. In politics and public life, when someone, even friends, say things that are inappropriate, to say so. In fact, in certain ways, when your friends say it, there's more of an obligation to do so. She actually is your employee, not ours. She's a she works for CNN. I think CNN would not allow her to be an operative for our campaign or the DNC. She's not. She never has been. She's certainly a supporter of the president.
There's more to that. Apparently, Dick Gregory pressed him a little bit. But a response, a comment from Ed Taft. You forget the news reporters of ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, PBS, New York Times, LA Times, Time Magazine, Newsweek magazines. Isn't the CNN employee really a shill for the DNC? Who would have thunk? Do you know she's had a visit to the White House close to 35 times? Rush Limbaugh the other day said 35, and somebody else on the news was reporting that was like 30-plus times. What do we got here? Deb Rasmussen says on why conservatism doesn't suck. The family unit makes us the strongest, strong people in the world. In order to weaken people, it's necessary to weaken the family unit. You see, I often talk about it in a very simplistic kind of way that has more to do with survival than anything else. And, you know, what's it all about, Alfie, right? What's it all about, Alfie? It's about survival. It's about the perpetuation of the species is why we exist. The main reason why any species exists, including man, is to perpetuate, is to grow and dominate our world, if you will, whatever that our world is. Different animals in the animal kingdom have their world. But we're put on this earth to dominate our world, and we have to proliferate. We have to give birth. We have to grow in numbers That's the nature of any being. That's the first reason to exist. As human beings, unlike animals, who are given the gift of reason, intelligence, the ability to use tools, allowed us to actually create what we call a civilization. Never forgetting the fact that we're animals needing to survive. And what's it all about, Alfie? It's survival. It's the perpetuation of the species. The best way that we've found through 5,000 years of trial and error of how a civilization can best get along in harmony, knowing of all the diverse differences that exist throughout the world. Because there's all kinds of human beings. And just like all kinds of animals, we each have our own peculiarities. Through many years of just trial and error, we've come to find the family unit tied into a paradigm of religious philosophy that is in conjunction with natural law. Religious doctrine, which has to do with more about ritual and geography than anything, the religious doctrine always follows the precepts of natural law. It is this foundation of thought that have allowed human beings just to be successful, to grow, to be able to coexist with other civilizations, knowing full well that there's evil out there, because there has to be. For everything good, there's something bad. Newton's third law. There has to be opposition. The family, man. It's all about the family. And what makes a family? Well, if you look at an atom, again, natural law, as you hear the jets overhead from Davis Monthan Air Base in Tucson, Arizona. If you look at natural law again, you look at the atom. The atom is a family. Oh, yeah. The atom is the family. It has a male component. It has a female component. And it has a place for the child. You got the proton, the electron, and the neutron. One and one makes one. The alpha, the omega. Not two alphas. Not two omegas, not two males, not two females, but what nature has commanded via natural law. Now, if others go outside of that, because we do have free will as human beings in every production cycle, including life's production cycle, and you have to think about it from a big picture standpoint, life is but a production cycle. It absolutely is. How can you not think that it isn't? Well, every production cycle has waste, has seconds, and has something that you put back in and you recycle it kind of thing. Well, unfortunately, in our world, we can't do that. These human beings come into the world and they're a bit odd. They're a bit different. I don't remember having too many problems with those that were different from us. You know, this notion about being in the closet, about being different, about, well, you know, that's rough. That's rough. Sometimes that's hard to do.
At any rate, folks, I'm going to tickle you with some of the music from the 60s that brought into the pop culture, the popularity. The popularity. Can you imagine? Be right back. What?
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, a fever all through the night. Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night. Everybody's got the fever. That is something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Romeo loved Juliet. Juliet, she felt the same. When he put his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. Now give us fever. When we kiss us, fever with thy flaming use. Fever, I'm a fire. Fever, yea, I burn forsooth. Captain Smith and Pocahontas had a very mad affair. When her daddy tried to kill him, she said, Daddy, oh, don't you dare. Give me fever. With his kisses, fever. When he holds me tight, fever. I'm his missus. Daddy, won't you treat him right? Now you've listened to my story. Here's the point that I have made. Chicks were born to give you fever, be it Fahrenheit or centigrade. They give you fever. When you kiss them, fever is your little line. Fever till you sizzle. What a lovely way to burn. What a lovely way to burn. What a lovely way to burn.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and aeroplanes. Lenny Bruce is not a
I didn't want to do that to you, folks. I don't know why I have that song playing on my little on my little set of choices there. But this is Tony Venuti, and I'm going to be taking a little break because I've got some good news to tell you, but not until you listen to this.
Oh, gosh, golly gee. Welcome back, folks, to the Ex-Conservative Radio Hour. Tony Venuti here, where each and every day I'm talking about virtue and evil and how evil exists but for one reason. To have a field day on good. To have a field day on good. Do you know what a measure of goodness is that I think is universal in the world? And by being able to understand a measure of goodness, we can maybe identify evil. Do you think a measure of goodness, as I see it, is that which you appreciate and cherish the life of children? We talk about the American dream like it's something you buy at a five and dime that all of a sudden we've been given the right to own. But I've always seen life as through the eyes of hope and dreams of a child and what they can become, what a child can become. The goodness being able to take something so precious and turn it into the greatest human being known to mankind. But what do you think about people who use children? What do you think about people who take away the hopes and dreams of children? What do you think about people that turn certain children into victims and make them feel less than valued, less than worthy of self-esteem, less than worthiness of what they can bring to their own selves? What do you make of that? I think that's pretty bad. When you think about the education of a child, that stands right in front of you when you talk about the grace of children and their hopes for their future. I've talked about my understanding to the incrementalization of a deliberate attempt, I believe, that I've been witness to for 50 years unwittingly, knowing full well that there's people up there pulling strings against the best interests of mankind. I told you about sitting next to Albert DeSalvo in Walpole State Prison after my first tour of duty inside of a prison, where the first week inside what they showed us for a film, what they showed us for entertainment, was The Longest Yard. Not only did it celebrate negative behavior and criminal behavior, but it essentially celebrated the idea about being antagonistic with prison guards. So I looked at this and I slid down in my chair. I remember it. Here I was, 21 years old, and I said to myself, I get it. This is all just but one little game. But one little game. What we have here is the education czar from years gone by. Talk about this is Charlotte Ezerby, deliberately dumbing down of our culture, and this is her firsthand account of it.
Charlotte Thompson Ezerbay, and I served as senior policy advisor in the United States Department of Education under the Reagan administration, during which I had access to all of the most important documents for the restructuring of not only American education, but global education. And I'm also the author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which gets into all of this, gives the background of what I saw not only in the Department of Education, but as a local school board member. I was trained to identify the resistors to the sex ed, drug ed, alcohol ed, suicide ed, death ed, those good, smart Americans who realize that anything that has education hanging off the end of it is probably not what they're looking for. I was trained to identify those good people and to go up against them and actually to go and try to get them to join us through the group process system, make them feel important, get them on a committee. And when that just blew my mind. I have to say, people often ask me, what is it that got you involved in education? Well, finding out what I saw at the local level certainly upset me. When I went and I saw that Americans were being trained to identify resistors, then I got pretty upset. And luckily, there was a big book that came with the in-service training called Innovations in Education, A Change Agent's Guide. And I was able to take that back home with me. Unbelievable examples of how to con the Christians and different people who are upset with what you're trying to do. How to bring them over to your side, case studies, true case studies of educators who had put programs in that normally, in a normal American town, nobody would want them. How did they manage to get them in? How did they con the people? And the other thing was, not only was I trained to identify the resistors, I was trained to go to the important people, high profile, highly thought of people in the community, with the Rotary, Chamber of Commerce, Garden Club, you name it, the different groups in our towns. Go to them and convince them of the importance of these new programs like sex ed, drug ed, I just mentioned all of them, and to get them on your side, because when you can get the leadership in a community to go along with it, then the newspaper comes in and says, you know, a committee's been set up with the head of the Rotary and this and that, and they're all getting behind this task force to discuss whether we're going to have a new sex education program. And then when Mary Jones, you know, who ordinarily would think, why would we want to have a sex education program when we don't have any problems with kids having sex or anything, so she might be, you know, concerned. She might be one of the resistors. She reads that her best friend, who's the head of the garden club, is on this committee, and she thinks, oh, well, hey, Mary Appleton is on that committee. She's heading it up. It must be okay. So I was taught really how to con the community. They always call everybody by the first name. You have to get very, you know, affectionate with people and say, William, you know, I'm so glad you've come to this meeting, and I understand your concerns about this program because, you know, I've had other people. Usually it's the really bright people in the community who have these concerns. And would you like to join our group? The original program was funded by my what would subsequently become my office. It was funded by the Office of Research in the U.S. Office of Education. Because it was funded early on, about the late 60s. Still funded, by the way. And the money went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor to a professor by the name of Ronald Havelock. And he was the one that put together the whole training, the whole seminar, the book. And in the back of the book you had, they admitted it, right in the back of the book, they had about 100 major change agents listed from all over the country. Some of them I recognize, some I still don't, but some I do. And so this was a very important project. And it was being, you know, it was being carried out in our, I'm sure, all over the country, not just where I was. This was in Searsport, Maine, this lovely little town on the coast of Maine, in the school there where they were, where the guy came in, the facilitator, not Mr. Havelock, not Professor Havelock, but a facilitator, to train us. And these were good people that were there. You know, they were some of the teachers from my school, where I was on the local school board, principals, et cetera, normal-looking Americans. You know, you really ask yourself, they must themselves have reacted very much the way I did. That's why I've always had a lot of understanding for teachers that have to go through this stuff. I didn't have to continue going through it. They've had to, through the years, constant training, retraining, sensitivity training, break their values. Right, no right, no wrong. You've got to have all religions represented, so, you know, tolerant of everything, and because that's the New World Order. Disorder, excuse me. Professor Benjamin Bloom is probably the most important behavioral psychologist ever to live. I mean, maybe not quite as much as Pavlov and Skinner, but he really implemented the system in education in the United States. And he was the author of The Taxonomy of Educational Objectives. And I know that doesn't mean much to us. It means a lot to teachers. They know. All teachers have to go through that, Bloom's taxonomy. And just to give you an idea of how blatant they are, Benjamin Bloom said the purpose of education, and I often say this to parents, really, listen to this. You think the purpose of education is reading, writing, and arithmetic? The purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And then he goes on and he says, he defines good teaching, and this is even worse from the parental standpoint, as challenging the students' fixed beliefs. And then in some of his works that I have, that are in my book, a lot of this stuff is in
there. When he says challenge, did he mean challenge or did he mean change? Change their fixed.
Yeah, through challenging. It's through challenging. You go up against them and you change them. And you ask a good question, because then he goes on in one part of the taxonomy that is in my book, he says that he can take a student from here to there, from a belief in God or his country or whatever, to being an atheist and not believing in his country in 1 hour. Oh, yeah, he does. And I've seen it with students. I've seen it with young people. And they don't even know, and teachers don't even know. That's why if you talk to teachers about it often, they'll really have an awfully hard time dealing with it. And if you go up to a superintendent, an educational administrator, superintendent or whatever, and you ask him or her, have you ever been through sensitivity training? They'll usually crack up because they went through it. They are the worst, those programs. I've been through them. I mean, how can anything be worse than some of the ones that the regular classroom has? But they're the worst. To bring about change, they put them through role-playing, psychodrama, all these psychological techniques where they play the part of starving children and the other one plays the part of a very wealthy, industrious child. And, you know, they bring about the attitude and value change through the emotions. You know how young people are. You know, they're naturally very altruistic and they want to help and they don't like to see poverty around the world. And so what they'll do is, just like I think I mentioned to you earlier, all right, I don't know whether I did, going into the teacher, putting in the new social studies program in our community and walking through, having taken little tots through town and identifying big, rich people's houses and small, poor people's houses. That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Getting them young and making them feel sorry for the people who live in the trailer across from the captain's house, because they only eat hot dogs, not steak. And then they'll do the same thing with Ethiopia or wherever, some third world country, showing them the children dying. And then they'll show pictures of our affluence. And what do you eat for breakfast? Oh, you have eggs and bacon and cereal and orange juice and grapefruit and everything. Yum, yum, yum. Do you really think it's fair? Common unity. That's what we call it, common unity. There's no role for the individual in the community. And for everything that goes on in the Soviet Union, or communism, is based on the community, the commune.
Collectivism and more. Boy, you want to talk about sinister stuff, huh? This is the kind of sinister stuff that is going on in our schools today, and you got it right here firsthand. It is, like, scary. That was Charlotte Iserbit deliberately dumbing down.
She was in the White House, I guess, 10 or 15 years ago as the education director. I mean, wow. Behavior modification. If you don't know intuitively that someone's not looking out for the best interests when you see them being the governance, the people governing, the people we trust to make the kinds of decisions. It's sort of like adopting a parent. Isn't when we vote somebody into office sort of like adopting a parent? Isn't it like the pirates adopting a warrior chief, huh? Somebody to lead them? You trust them to do in the best interests of the bigger picture that includes you, not to be used, not to have your existence taken from you. God, this is sinister, man. This is Tony Venuti, folks. You're listening to the Ex-Conservative Radio Hour from Tucson, Arizona. I'm coming right back in just a few minutes. This is Tony Venuti, where each and every day I'm your eyewitness to the pop culture and political correctness squared by the culture of celebrity and the disease of victimization. Each week I bring to you some of the cause and effects that are creating the political environment of unrest in Tucson, Arizona. And one of those topics is the La Raza program. The La Raza program, we don't own it in Arizona. There's over 300 chapters of a La Raza. As a matter of fact, just last month, President Obama spoke to the National La Raza group, I believe, in Washington. And La Raza, if you didn't know, folks, in one simple word, means the race. It means the race. La Raza seems to think they've got it going on. They seem to think that they need to take America back. Well, I'm bringing Arizona Laura back with me, as we do each and every Wednesday. Good morning, Laura. How are you? Let me see.
Tony, how you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you very much. Well, as I've been talking about LaRaza, and I enjoy these conversations very much, where do you come across all these, this material that you read from week to week with us?
I got them from the horse's mouth. They didn't want to give them to us. They didn't want to cooperate. They didn't cooperate, actually. But we finally persisted and threatened lawsuits and went to the attorney general. And actually, we went to the superintendent of all Arizona schools a few years. And he was kind enough to help us. And they had to bring some of the books down, and we couldn't believe what we found in those books. So we sent away for more. We wanted to know lists. We got lists of what they use in RASA studies. In RASA studies, what it does is it they have classes that substitute for American history.
Yeah.
And they call it From Mexican Perspectives. This La Raza movement is not a Hispanic movement. This is, I want to make this clear, this is only a Mexican movement because Mexico is the only country that wants to take over the Southwest, and now they want to take over the whole United States, not just the South. Because they've got so many millions. There's not 11 million. There's between 40 and 60 million. I got this from good sources, of illegal aliens. Most of them are from Mexico. Because Mexico doesn't. Mexico is very, very, they're one of the worst human rights violators in the world. They have more complaints about the way they treat their illegal aliens. They don't want them coming up here. They want Mexicans coming up here so they can take back, they can steal what we've got, what we've worked for all these years. And they think they have a right to it. They tell, even though they only owned the Southwest for 24 years, the least of everybody. And I can't stress that enough. And they were never up here. Everything that they say is Aztlan, which is this mythical area of a few states. It was all based on myth, all on legend. Did they even admit it in their books? Their writers will even admit it. It's based on myth. One writer says myth is reality. No, myth is not reality. Myth is myth.
Yeah, well, you know, Bill O'Reilly will tell everybody that perception is reality. And I tell people, if you think perception is reality, then you're living an illusion. And all you're doing is, we understand when people say perception is reality. We understand, at least I do, and it usually typically refers to someone who, because they're stupid and can't use logic, reason, and deduction, will perceive something that is in fact not true and treat it like that's true, but that doesn't make it true. I don't care if 99% of everybody's stupid and they perceive it as something else, the wrong answer. Don't tell me that's the truth because more people perceive it.
Exactly. I mean, you have people who are, I mean, they're mentally disturbed and there's something, you know, wrong with them, and they see things completely different, things that don't exist. And I mean, it can become, your perception can become reality if you fool enough people. And that's what they're trying to do.
But it's not the reality. That's the key.
But it's not reality, right. Exactly. But the Mexicans would like to make it reality, and so they lie to their children, and they tell their children they own this land for 40,000. They never owned this land for 40,000 years. American Indians were here for thousands of years. There were people even before American Indians, but American Indians were here for thousands, but they're completely different races. And
well,
actually, many,
the best description I have for myths are those stories that reach far back into human consciousness and thought. And they present through symbol and metaphor and intuitive understanding. And what that further infers is that without any thinking, you come to conclusions. And it's all because of these myths that are implanted in our brains. And they're hard to defeat.
Manipulating minds. A lot of what the RASA is doing is manipulating our words, manipulating Americans' words to manipulate Americans' minds. We are so far away from, except unless your parents, like my parents,
like that.
Are immigrants.
I like that statement right there, manipulating words to manipulate minds.
Exactly. That's why they call illegal aliens immigrants. They're not immigrants. Immigrants are people who get online and wait for years. They follow the laws. Illegal aliens are illegal aliens. They're people who come by breaking our laws. But you see, they try to manipulate everybody. Years ago, I wrote in one of our local newspapers, this Mexican lady had written an article, and she said something about, you know, how illegal aliens are just coming for jobs and they're just all good people. And I wrote back and said, look, I have a newsletter. I get hundreds of articles a night on the child molestation among illegal aliens, the murder, the I mean, they're killing more Americans than all the wars that we have right now going on. Illegal aliens kill more Americans every year than what than the Americans who die in our wars. That's how bad it is. And they Steve King, who's a senator from Iowa, he approximated 25 Americans a day die by the hands of illegal aliens. 13 through DUIs.
Are you kidding?
And 12 through, yeah, no, this is true, and 12 through, this is an approximation, of course, 12 through homicide. So, I mean, it's just horrific what's going on. I mean, they're destroying the country, literally. And in every state, there's not a state that is not suffering from these people. And there's so many, I worked with criminals for many years as a paralegal, and you see them coming across, and you see, I mean, these are tons of them. They say the statistics think at least 20% of all the illegals sneaking through a day, and that's thousands of illegals, they've been doing this for years, thousands a day, were violent criminals in their own country before ever coming here. That's how much we, and they I forget, was it 12 or 20, they think child molesters alone come across a day. That's why there's so much of it. And Mexico has an especially bad problem with child molestation. People don't even report it a lot of the time. Because it's so frequent, and molesting little girls and women, and I mean, you know, raping women, it's just not considered a big deal. A lot of the, I was reading some articles by Dave Gibson, and he was saying things like, you know, a lot of the perpetrators of rapes here of women from Mexico, when the perpetrators are from Mexico, they will say to the judge, I didn't know I was doing anything wrong, because in Mexico they don't get prosecuted. You know, and it's like, and to us, that's very, very strange. But we're dealing with foreign cultures. I've lived in seven countries, and, I mean, you're dealing with different cultures. Different cultures have different ways of thinking. But Western, I mean, civilization and Europe and things like that, they're more akin to the way we think. But if you go down to a lot of different countries, they have such different ways of thinking that we can't understand. We just can't fathom.
But why do we even go there with that concern? I mean, because the bottom line is, it's just like us here who may understand the laws, but if they don't know the laws in existence, and the old saying goes, ignorance of the law is no excuse. We've always been held to that standard, and I don't think ignorance to the law is any different from anybody, regardless of their culture or not. And I think with these progressive judges in the past 50 years of feel good, warm, fuzzy, the whole nine yards, I think your perspective, or what you're articulating anyway, is probably very common in terms of, oh, these people, they don't understand, so now they're doing X, Y, and Z, but X, Y, and Z is a little different for them than for an American who, because they understand the laws, might be treated a little differently. So even when we lose more, and when we win, we don't win at all.
Right,
I mean,
and what's even
it's
worse...
It's like we're the enemy for having things. We're the enemy for succeeding. Again, performance-based. You don't perform, you made your bed, sleep in it.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, you're coming to our country, so you have to observe our laws. But what's happening, I've interpreted for thousands and thousands of Hispanics. I always loved Spanish. I still love the language. I love most of the people I meet. But what I couldn't get over is that I noticed that when I would interpret for Mexicans, so many, not all of them, because there's a lot of good ones who come here because they want to get away from that country. They want to get away from
it.
You know, they have Roman law. They just recently changed it, but they still have that mentality of Roman law that you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent and things like that. But the attitude I would get, and this is the biggest problem, is their attitude, is that they say, you don't need laws. We have laws in Mexico. We don't follow them. What do you need laws for? And you know, it was the first one to tell me that. We had a fellow who smashed the car into a young 20-year-old girl who goes to the university here, or used to go to the university here. 20 years old, she's now paralyzed from neck down. Do you think he had any remorse? 48-year-old national from Mexico, here illegally, telling us, and he is very proud, I have no insurance, I have no license, I have no nothing. I mean, as far as driving, what do you need a lot? What do you need that for? We said to him, she was there with the, she had the right of way, and he smashed into her car. He says, I was there first. What do you mean right of way? She said, yes, but she had the law. He said, you don't need law. I come from Mexico. We don't follow laws. He had absolutely no remorse. I mean, he smashed her car, and she is now paralyzed from neck down. And this guy will just go out again and drive some more. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a completely different mentality. They're not coming here because they love my parents came here because they loved our freedoms, because they believe
sure.
in what America stands for. These people come, tons of them come, because if they cared for what the country stands for and that we're
well,
a nation of laws, they would follow the laws to come here. But they come here because they don't care about our laws. All they care about is money and what they can take from us. And they don't care if it's fair.
And we've
or
had
if it's
people
stealing.
In place. We've had people in place. We've had the media in place to display to the world, on one hand, in a celebratory manner, the way our culture exists, the way we consume abundanza, the way we waste, et cetera, et cetera. And they do that just because that's their promotion of our pop culture. Nothing withstanding in terms of evil. No, that comes when they purposefully create a dialogue or a rhetoric that shows to the world just how mean we are, how bad we are, how because of our religion, because of our willingness to go to war. And so now we have our own people on the inside telling the rest of the world, I mean, this is how it's happening, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Over the past 50 or 60
yeah.
years?
Oh, yeah. And we teach the kids that our, I mean, we are a very, very special country. When I was young, I was also into this, oh, America's terrible, blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, we have had some bad things in our
well, sure.
country. We have had, I mean, the blacks should have had their civil rights right along, you know. Every country, there's always prejudice against
yep.
new immigrants and stuff. But what we're not talking about is immigrants. We're talking about illegal aliens who are here illegally, who don't have rights because they shouldn't have rights because they spat
right.
on our laws. You know what I mean? But every country has things that, you know, have gone wrong. But what we're based on is wonderful. I've lived in 7 countries, and those are the countries I've lived in over 3 months each. And I came back loving this country because what I saw in other countries, you can't compare. This is really the best country in the world. That's why the whole world comes here.
We have a heart. We have a heart.
We do. We have more compassion, probably more compassion than we even should have, because we have compassion for people
mm-hmm.
who want to kill us.
And
who
see,
want to
it's our heart.
Our country.
It's our heart that's going to get the best of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we not only have compassion, but we also are lazy in confronting evil because we don't want to believe it exists. Because then, at the same token, we're going to have to acknowledge that we now have to live up to certain standards and mores. And I don't want to be criticized out loud in the public. Maybe I just better toe the line. So that sort of goodness sort of bites us both ways. Do you see that at all?
Oh, yeah, and you have to. You can have compassion, and compassion is a good thing, but you have to use your brain also. You both sides, you can't just, I mean, we feel sorry for everybody. Well, feel sorry is okay
yep.
as long as they're not tearing your country down and taking the food out of your kids' mouths and taking your kids' education away. But when it gets to the point of ridiculousness, that's, you have to stop, and you got to use your head.
Imagine having a guest in your house that you're letting stay for a couple
right.
weeks, they're visiting or whatever, and they're just a guest, and, you know, they're not contributing anything, they're your guest. Well, all of a sudden you realize the guest isn't just a guest. He's, in fact, a thief. And now that you know he's a thief, what do? Nothing. You do nothing. You know now that he's a thief. He's in your house. You haven't asked him to go. And you haven't confronted him on the fact that you know he's a thief and there's going to have to be some retribution here, one way or the other, least of which, get the hell out of Dodge.
Oh, I've heard another one. Where somebody sneaks into the, you have a big house and they sneak into the back of it. And while you're living in the front, they're living in the back, and they're using this, and they're using your electricity and your gas, and they're when you're not looking, they're taking the food out of your refrigerator. And but then they start cleaning your toilets, and then you say, hey, what are you doing in my house? Get out. They say, well, wait a minute, I've been cleaning your toilets for years. You got to let me stay now. Now you got to let me stay.
Yeah.
And eventually they're going to say, well, this is my house, you get out, and I'll stay in here. Then what are you going to do? You know, then there's so many of them. By that time, you know, Cal Thomas wrote an article, I remember, a while back, and he even said that. When will this stop? How many illegals will, before they outnumber us, you know? And we wrote a book, me and I and Dave Gibson, and it's called Replacing Americans. And I honestly believe that's what they're doing.
Laura, when I was as young as under 10 years old, I remember going to the movie for 25 cents, and my father would tell me, oh, in my day, we would go to the movie for
a
nickel and still have some popcorn and some money left over.
I realized
the exponential growth of numbers early on.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think about a penny piece of bubble gum being a dollar. I used to, you know, extrapolate that kind of thinking out with basic math skills. I just always had the common sense thinking of exponential growth. A snowball going downhill doubles up in size, doubles in speed, et cetera, before you know it's going at the speed of light. So when I saw the immigration problem being talked about, or when my first awareness as a youngster, I said the same thing. If no one stops the flow... It's pure math.
And
it's
Napolitano
not a
has
if,
never.
It's a question of when.
Right. Napolitano, who I consider the worst, absolute worst governor this state of Arizona has ever had, she would do next to nothing for this state to stop the illegals. And then one of my friends is from, born in Mexico, and she's a naturalized citizen, and she's American first. She told me, she said one of her friends did a genealogy on Napolitano, and Janet Napolitano's grandmother, Senora Ferro, is Mexican. And her father, even though it's Italian name, Napolitano, it was born in Mexico. And she's got all these relatives that are Mexican. This is why she doesn't want to stop it. I personally think she's an Aztlaner. I think she wants to make this Mexico. But, Tony, let me just stop you for a minute. Do you want me to read from one of the books?
Yes. Yes,
because
I do.
Only have a few minutes left.
Great. Why don't you read, from which text are you going to be reading from the La Raza?
Well, this is called Borderlands, La Frontera by Gloria Anzaldúa. And this is a book that's in English, Latino perspectives, which it substitutes English and it teaches the kids Latino literature. And I have actually read from it before, but I never got to read this part. There's just two little parts here. There's a poem, and to me, this is insightful language. When you teach kids to hate, you make somebody out so loathsome and so hateful that they can't help but hate them. This is a made-up poem. This is not real. This is made-up, and it's called We Call Them Greasers. And this is it's a white man talking, supposedly. Like I say, this is a made-up poem. I found them here when I came. They were growing corn in their small ranches, raising cattle, horses, smelling of wood smoke and sweat. They knew their betters. They took off their hats, placed them over their hearts, lowered their eyes in my presence. Weren't interested in bettering themselves. Why, they didn't even own the land, but they shared it. I guess they're sharecroppers. Wasn't hard to drive them off. Cowards they were, no backbone. I showed them a piece of paper with some writing, told them they owed taxes, had to pay right away and be gone by mañana. By the time me and my men had waved that same piece of paper to all the families, it was all frayed at the ends. Some loaded their chickens, children, wives, and pigs into rickety wagons, pans and tools dangling, clanging from all sides. Couldn't take their cattle. During the night, my boys had frightened them off. Oh, there were a few troublemakers who claimed we were the intruders. Some even had land grants and appealed to the courts. It was a laughing stock, them not even knowing English. Still, some refused to budge, even after we burned them out. And the women, well, I remember one in particular. She lay under me whimpering. I plowed into her, kept thrusting and thrusting. Remember, these are for kids. These are for high school kids.
Uh-huh.
thrusting and thrusting, felt him watching from the mesquite tree, heard him kiss his her boyfriend or her husband, heard him keening like a wild animal. In that instant, I felt such contempt for her round face and beady black eyes like an Indian's. Notice that he puts the Indians down, and the writer says she has beady black eyes like an Indian's. Afterwards, I sat on her face until her arm stopped flailing. In other words, he sat on her face until he killed her. Didn't want to waste a bullet on her. The boys wouldn't look at me in the eyes. I walked up to where I had tied her man to the tree and spat in his face. Lynch him, I told the boys. Now, can you make somebody out to be more loathsome or more hateful than the person she raped? This is a made-up story. She's making this up so the kids hate white people. And she makes Mexicans are always, they have the same themes. Mexicans are always the victims, and white men are always brutal and stole their land. And this is the same theme that runs up in so many of their books, you know. So that's one thing. Then she has here, I wanted to tell you about the words. This is words for high school kids, but these are not words that you will find in most American books. She has son of a bee at page 124. At page 117, 118, and 170, she has the SH word. I don't want to say the words out loud. These are all curse words. At 72, 84, 129, 145, and 192, she has the F word. At page 194, she has a derogatory, they have derogatory terms for white people, men and women. This is for white women. Page 119, she's got two more dirty words. Page 117, she has dirty words for blacks. They have words that they call blacks that are the equivalent of nigger in Spanish. You know, I mean, it's altogether, I mean, this is just a few pages that I looked at. These were 12 pages of dirty words. Why are we teaching this to our kids in public schools?
So they can fit right in. So they can fit right in. When they come into town, they can fit right in.
These books should not be. And then at the end, she calls for, well, let me read you one more little part of a poem here. To live in the borderlands means the mill with the razor-white teeth wants to shred off your olive-red skin, crush out the kernel, your heart, pound you, pinch you, roll you out, smelling like white bread but dead. And at the very end, she calls for revolution, and she has another one here, another poem. I'll translate it into English. We shall return. We will take the war from well within. With that light of the soul, on that awkward night, spirit will be reborn from our land. Let's arise, raza. Arise, wake up, my people. Let's liberate the pueblos. Arise, my people, wake up. You see, so it's all about liberation, revolution. They have the dirty words in there. Everything puts down Americans. It victimizes, the Mexicans are always the victims, pushes the Aztlan agenda, and distorts American history. And this is what the same themes that run through almost all the books, except for the books that are written by communists, because a lot of times they teach you the communist, dialect or whatever they call it.
I just find it so, I was going to say fascinating. No, there's nothing fascinating. I just find it incredulous that this can go on to such magnitude.
But you know why it's gone on? Nobody has read the books. Nobody has. There's no proof. I got the original papers, and there's absolutely no proof to show that anyone has read the books. And they actually admitted it. I was at a board meeting a few weeks ago, and they admitted it, that nobody's reading the books. That's how this stuff is getting passed. And that's probably how the stuff is getting passed in all these 300 programs across the United States, is people have gotten lax about education. I was told that in Texas they have just changed the laws or the rules, and now before any book, goes into a school or a classroom, it is going to be read by a group of people. And actually they talked about two groups of people. And I think that's wonderful. I think we have to go back to the old ways, and we need to see what these kids are learning. I mean, there's so many wonderful things to teach kids. I mean, teach them about, you know, the world, about culture, science, math, everything that, you know, things they need to handle in the world. Why are we teaching them to hate? Especially in our public schools, this is crazy. Why? So that they can go kill somebody? So that some child is going to get murdered someday? I mean, this has got to stop now, and it's got to stop all over. We have to take hate out of our classrooms. We have to take revolution out of our classrooms. This is not where you teach this stuff. This shouldn't be taught anyplace. We have the best country in the world, and we're losing it, and we need to do something about it. Call your legislators, your senators, and your congressmen, and tell them to check what's in being taught in Rasa studies. Get the lists of the books, and if they don't cooperate, take them to court. Find out what's in those books that's being taught in those classes. And take the revolution and hate out, because somebody, some child especially, is going to get killed. And I
well, we appreciate all the we appreciate all the energy you're putting into it, Laura. And we depend on you to just give us an update every week. We're going to look for you next week.
Hold on, I will check in 1 second, and I'll.
Yeah. See, Laura is very detailed oriented. We enjoy each other very well because, indeed, opposites attract.
I can do that. Yes, next week will be fine, honey.
music, you know. Great music of the 60s that celebrated liberalism, that made it sexy, that made it cool, that made it popular, that made everything connected to it all correlate into going along with the train of thought that said, hey, we understand that, like you, I didn't like my parents either. I think they and the generations before them are just too tough on us. Because, you see, conservatism sucks. Yeah, someone has to do the heavy lifting, doesn't it? I'm terribly sorry. You're damn right. Conservatism sucks. I wish I didn't have to be accountable for. I wish I didn't have to always get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and perform on a daily basis. No, I know it sucks. Welcome back, folks. This is Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio hour, and it's essentially a plus or a minus. It's good or bad. Are you a good person or are you a bad person? Is something that is happening right now, this minute, positive energy or negative energy? Is somebody transferring negative energy onto others for no particular good reason, because there never is? The rub, of course, is understanding that there's some negative energy put upon negative energy. And a double negative is a positive, is it not? I won't not do something is doing something, isn't it? I won't not do something is a positive. So when you truly are against the negative in a seemingly negative way because it's confrontational, well, get over it, man. That's called life. We're on the side of right. You got it? Have the power of certainty. Celebrate. Celebrate. It's right, man. Celebrate that power of certainty. NOPC Radio Network. Man, I went onto your site. That's pretty neat. You got it down. I'm jealous, man. I'm jealous. No, I'm not. Put that link up there. Celebrate. Publish or perish, right? People always talk about shameless self-promotion. No, man, there's no shame here. No shame here whatsoever. Oh, maybe that's their point, huh? In the idea of shameless. You're damn right. You're damn right. All right, fine. Fine, you're damn right. Shameless. Yeah. Publish or perish, you get it? See, it's all about the 80-20 rule and ridicule coming from those that, oh, I had that idea. Oh, that was, I thought of that. Oh, I could have said that, but you didn't, did you, pal? But you didn't. Gosh, I hate small minds. Small minds is what's costing us where we are today. But see, that's human nature, and it was probably natural law that it had to happen like this, because evil finds a way, like any other, parasite sucks up on something. Always finds its prey because it's just there, man. It's like a magnet. It's like the universe, isn't it? It's like the circular motion just breeds gravity, right? And it just feeds off of each other, and then it'll, well, getting over myself now. I'm getting metaphysical. I don't know. Is that right? Anyway, folks, you listen to Tony Venuti just basic rant about the cultures to it, about the good forces versus bad forces. Are you a good witch or are you a bad witch? Which are you? Man, hey, come on. Give me a break. I just want to know. Give me some guidance. I just want to know. I just want to trust you. You're in charge of our life. Oh, as a people, isn't that what it's almost like from an infancy standpoint, to where the forces of evil, you know, the kind of people that are of that liberal leftist mindset, that and get it right, all right? All roads lead back to Marx. Have we got that right? Are we in agreement? Can we have a hurrah for the Communist Manifesto? Can we? All starts with the family and the religion. Let's break it down, baby. Let's break down the components of the forces that allowed civilization to exist, to it to grow, for it to perpetuate. Because, really, what's it all about, Alfie? What's it all about, Alfie? It's about survival, man. Survival of the species, the self-perpetuation of the species. And it's best done in a family unit, in a civilized environment from which, unlike animals, we've been given, you know, some intelligentsia, some free will, some conscience. and all those other components that separate us from man to beast. But we don't, we're denying, we shouldn't deny the beast that remains within us. And the forces that are only natural. Natural law commands that, it takes a lot of time to weed things out. It's sort of called evolution. You see, I'm okay with this religious story and this science story because I really think it's also, I think it's the same. I think it's the same. It's all good, you know what I mean? It's all good. As long as it's all positive. What's so difficult about sensing a positive vibe against a negative vibe and knowing full well that anyone who is out there in one's own, I mean, I'm going off, hang on a second. At some point, I got to discipline myself. And, you know, self-discipline is when you have to do, you don't want to do what you don't want to be doing when you don't want to be doing it, right? That's that self-discipline thing. I said I have to do that and just calm myself and get into this. I didn't want to go there. It's too deep of a subject, you know? And I'm always going off topic anyway, so I haven't even finished with this one. But I was talking about all roads leading back to Marx, and it truly is. And I think he had to exist. I think he was a nature's negative force that needed to exist because Newton's third law. There is no one-sided coin. There must be opposition. It's simply natural law. Many thousands of years of civilization and the Catholic Church, you know, the Catholic Church was always bummed for being so strict through the years, wasn't it? I guess there were some seriously bad stories, but weren't there a bigger picture? Sort of like to do good. See, I'm all right with nothing's perfect. I'm all right with nothing's perfect. I really am. If you can accept that nothing's perfect, and you got a good way to go. You got a good start, okay? You got a good start on your day if you can accept that nothing's perfect. But hey, maybe that's how you decide on whether you want to be happy or sad the next day, huh? It's just by determining if everything has to be perfect today. Now, that doesn't mean you don't strive to be, man. That doesn't mean you don't let your guard down. But you relax, man. It's all fun. KJ says, parental love is, develops a beautiful soul. Absolutely. Man, it's... this whole universe is really energy, love, and God. God being truth, God being knowledge, all-knowing, all-seeing. I mean, you think we got here by accident. Give me a break. And KJ says, always serious. Yeah, I'm your parent, not your friend. That's what that's it, because that's responsibility. I used to ask my mother, I would say, hey, Ma, how come you're so tough on us? But my friends love you, man. You're a kick. And she was. All her friends dug her. My mother was pretty popular. She was charismatic. She was a hot ticket, as her friends would say. And my mother would respond, she says, I'm your mother, not your friend. She didn't have to say that too much because she basically illustrated it, demonstrated it, actualized it, was it. You know, she commanded authority, right? She didn't demand it. She commanded it because she did it right, meaning that she had your best interest at heart and you believed it because it was true. And she demonstrated it at much sacrifice to her time. And you learn that as you get somewhat older, but the kid inherently knows it too. I can't tell you how many times I said to my mother, Ma, I hate you. Of course, I'd catch her crying and I'd go up and I'd say, I'm sorry, I really didn't mean it, I was just mad. See, what we have is a cultural transition of a way of thought that's essentially like religion. It says what's important in this world? What's important in this world? Is it to be any way that you want it to be and let the world decay in such a fashion that as long as someone's taking care of them, that sort of works, especially for the people taking care of them, because now there's a need, isn't there? Now there's a need for that entity that seemingly it's the diametric opposite of what we've been used to for hundreds and hundreds and really hundreds and hundreds of years, even though quite barbaric on the side of tough. There wasn't too much love, huh? Now we got too much love, not enough tough. Years ago, there was too much tough. You see that pendulum. Zing, zing.
At any rate, folks, you've been listening to Tony Venuti on the ex-conservative radio from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's the culture, stupid. Don't let them tell you it's a damn economy. The economy is personal, isn't it? I mean, if you're working and you've got money coming in, yeah, you care about next year. But if you see your neighborhood decaying, you have a great day. Ciao, gang. Later.